what's beneath the surface of true crime. Uncover brings you there with premium investigations that demand justice. Each season delves into a distinct case, from the inner workings of a cult to the disturbing legacy of residential schools. Promising new content year-round, Uncover will take you on a journey through explosive revelations with hosts dedicated to revealing the truth. Uncover, the best in true crime. Find it on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. This is a CBC podcast.
Israel has stepped up military action in Rafah, the city on the border of Egypt, where over a million people in Gaza have taken refuge. The Israeli military is also threatening to expand its offensive if Hamas does not return the remaining Israeli hostages before Ramadan next month. Yusuf Hamash and his family are among those who fled south looking for safety. He's an advocacy officer for the Norwegian Refugee Council. Yusuf, hello.
Hi, Matt.
How are you?
Alhamdulillah, I'm alive.
Where are you right now?
In Rafah.
And how have you been since we last spoke?
Unfortunately, the situation is getting worse and worse on a daily basis. Everything with the struggle and the challenging daily life is getting more difficult.
Can you describe what that's like? I mean, when I asked you how you were, you said, you know, you're alive, which is as much as perhaps you can ask for. Tell me what life is like right now.
And when I answer you, first of all, that I am alive, and to be honest, during all these circumstances that we are going through, being alive is such a privilege. So I think that the most thing that we are looking for now is to stay alive. Situation here is getting worse every day. Unfortunately, there is lack of access for the basic needs for everyone here. They are talking about over a million of people who are displaced in Rafah and doesn't have any accessibility to have access to their basic needs or to feed their children. We have a huge issue related to the drinkable water and the most needy water, and there is a mass spread of disease among displaced families because of that crowd, like the crowdness, and there is no medicine available. There is a few medical points that are available to use for displaced families in Rafah, but also again, Rafah as a city doesn't have the infrastructure to host all that amount of people. So it's all of this crowdness and all these challenges, it make it more impossible, and it became kind of a competition between displaced families to reach their basic needs, either to wait in line in front of a bank ATM or waiting in line in front of get some bread or to fill your jerry can with water. And this is the daily life, the cycle of life for families who have been displaced in Rafah, unfortunately.
Where are you getting your food and where are you getting your water from?
We are the same as other, almost over a million. And we are trying to secure our basic needs. Thankfully, I kind of have the financial capacity to cover my need. But unfortunately, not everyone have that ability. Because I came earlier to Rafah. I'm more than 2 months now in Rafah. I had to secure my sources, which is based on a networking. Unfortunately, families who came on after the expanding the military operation in Khan Yunis, these families came. While there was a dire need in Rafah, there is thousands and thousands of families who are already in need, and there is nothing to cover that need. Imagine then these families came looking for a shelter. So they start to make makeshift shelters, and we have different waves of displacements every few days, started from the middle area, then Khan Yunis, and that also make a huge pressure on the capacity of the Rafah as a city itself. So it became more difficult to access your basic needs.
How worried are you and how worried are people about the possibility of a ground invasion? Israel has said that if Hamas does not release hostages, perhaps by Ramadan, that the military will move into Rafah. How worried are you about that?
Yeah, what reduce our tension and the tension in our heads is that they are talking about Ramadan. So as we have a glimmer of hope that we will find a solution up to Ramadan. The previous few days, we didn't have that option. We were thinking that they are going to expand the military operation in Rafah in any moment, because that's what we were hearing from the Israeli media and Israeli spokesperson. And also we had a huge incident in Rafah when the Israelis released two hostages from Rafah, and to cover that, I think they did huge amount of airstrikes in the same time and all over across Rafah, killing over 100 people. That day, for me was the indication that, okay, now they are going to expand the military operation in Rafah, and that's it. And it's the question everyone said. Everyone's asking everyone what we are going to do if they expand the military operation of Rafah.
What would you do? What would you do?
Of displacement. Unfortunately for me, I was displaced from a place to the other. Yani for me, the last destination I could reach it in Rafah. I live in the far north of Gaza Strip, and now I'm living in the far south of Gaza Strip, Rafah, near the Egyptian border. So this is the maximum limit I could reach. This is the final destination was for me. Yani after that, there is no realistic option for us as displaced families in Rafah. Yani this is impossible to find options and solutions. Yani what we are going to do, going to the middle area, which is overcrowded and also under bombardment on a daily basis, or they will allow us to go back to the north and Gaza City, which is split from the rest of Gaza. And people are dying from famine. People are dying from hunger every day. And the struggle that people are having in the northern part of Gaza, you cannot compare it to our struggle in the south, and especially in Rafah. At least even it's challenging. It's some kind of impossible, but somehow you could manage it. In the north, it's impossible. People were relying to eat animal food. And now, imagine that human beings are in competition with animals to find food in the north and Gaza City. So what are the options for that have been put in front of us to take it? We don't have options. Either we run towards the Egyptian border, and I don't think they will welcome us this way, or we have on the other side the military operation in Khan Yunis, and there is no distance between Khan Yunis and Rafah. We can clearly hear the tanks, the crashes, the bombardment, the huge amount of bombardment that's taking place in Khan Yunis. What gives us a huge concern, actually, when we are hearing already the bombing airstrike in Khan Yunis, we are waiting because we know that we are next. But there is no option have been left for us.
Do you have any hope in the situation that you're in right now?
If we lost hope, I think the only thing that we still have is hope. And we lose most of it because the humanity itself have failed us. International community have failed us. World leaders have failed us. So the only thing that remains for us as people in Gaza is hope. If we lose hope, we lose everything. We lose our sense of humanity. And we are struggling, fighting to keep it. Just we want to keep the sense of being a human being, have feelings towards our families and our children, trying to manage their needs, giving them sense of safety, finding them water, proper clothes during this harsh weather that we are going in. All of that, we are doing that because we have a bit of hope, and we are convincing ourselves that, okay, soon we rely on news. There is some positive news coming from Egypt about the negotiations. Or yani, we convince ourselves to keep hoping. Otherwise, we will collapse and we will surrender for the situation that we are going through. And that will reflect our responsibilities towards our families and children. You don't know, you cannot imagine how was people were in a shock and very happy for a misleaded, mistranslated news about the negotiation in Egypt that they thought that we had a ceasefire. Thousands of families who were in tents were shouting, whistling, because they thought it's finished. People are starving to an end for this madness around us. We are keeping hoping, and we will keep hoping until an end of this madness.
Yusuf, I'm glad to talk to you again. Take care of yourself, and thank you very much.
It's an honor, Matt. Thank you for the chance, Matt. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yusuf Hamash is an advocacy officer for the Norwegian Refugee Council. He is in Rafah.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart MacLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share 2 hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
Ido Moed is Israel's ambassador to Canada. He is in Ottawa. Ambassador, good morning to you.
Good morning, Matthew.
Thank you for being back on the program with us. Will Israel launch a ground invasion of Rafah?
We are at a war, and I must tell you, our hearts go out to anybody who is suffering enormously under this horrific war. But it can be over in an hour if Hamas lay down the weapons and release the abductees. It's very simple. And you know that both of us didn't hear the word Hamas come out of the mouth of our previous speaker because of the fear that it instills among Palestinians. They are also hostages in this situation. So what we have to do is to release 134 abductees that are held by Hamas. We want to make sure that they don't pose a threat to Israel anymore. If they lay down the weapons and release the hostages, everything changes.
If Israel launches a ground invasion of Rafah, there are a million people there, half of Gaza's population, people, as you heard, who have been through multiple displacements. They were told that Rafah was a safe zone, and now there could be an assault there. Where are they supposed to go?
Matt, this situation is horrific. But we have just conducted a very meticulous, carefully orchestrated operation in the hospital, the Nasser Hospital. And we found hundreds of Hamas terrorists hiding there, dressed as medical staff. Some of them even participated in the massacre of October the 7th.
This isn't something that we can confirm, because obviously journalists can't get in there. And we can talk about the hospital in a moment. But if you're talking about Rafah, where are people supposed to go? If there is an invasion, a ground invasion of Rafah, where are those people, the million people, supposed to go?
So the question is really, how do we get our hostages back? I think this should be the question, of course.
The question I'm asking you is, where will those people go?
When we started this operation, you're asking me, you want an answer for me that is, I suppose, tactical or operational. And you know that I'm not in no position to tell you that. But I'm saying to you that our considerations when we are thinking about any kind of further operations to release the hostages and to stop the threat emanating from Hamas, take into consideration the needs of the population. And so when the massacre took place, Israel just didn't start the operation. It took a long time to think how do we conduct this incredible warfare that was never conducted by any military in the world, but it's necessary because those people are out there to kill us.
But that question is important in part because it's not me asking the question. It's the international community that's asking the question. You have Joe Biden, who has called Israel's actions in Gaza, in his words, over the top. The UK is saying you need to think very seriously before taking any further action. Canada says that Israel needs to listen to its friends. There is increasing pressure from some of Israel's closest allies to prevent a ground invasion in Rafah. Canada says Israel needs to listen to its friends. Will you listen to your friends?
We are. We are listening very carefully to everyone. And we are thinking very long and hard what to do next. You see that we are already speaking about this for several days, if not weeks. So what's the question here? We are thinking about this, and we know it's incredibly complicated. We know it.
The United States has proposed a resolution to the UN Security Council saying that a ground offensive in Rafah should not proceed. For the first time, the U.S. has used the phrase ceasefire in that resolution. What does that tell you?
It tells us that Hamas is close to achieving its goal through terror, creating pressure on the population, which they, as they say, they want to sacrifice so that the international community will pressure Israel to surrender and expose itself to further attacks. This is what is going on. And I don't think that our government is ready to do that just yet. We are not ready to surrender, lay down our weapons, turn our back on the murderers and let them stab us in the back again and again and again, as they said, because they butchered women, children, babies. They've done that, and they will do it again. So we have to find a situation where the population is not held hostage anymore, liberate Hamas, the Gaza Strip from Hamas, and find a way to live together with these people that we were trying to live together with until October the 7th, providing them with work, providing them with economic support, providing them with alternatives to Hamas that didn't really materialize, because Hamas actually monopolized the government there and took these people hostages that you hear that they're not even daring to say Hamas on air because they don't know what are the repercussions for them. So security situation in that part of the world is a little different than in this part.
Do you think Israel is losing international support for its war? There was great solidarity after the 7th of October. And when you hear the United States, the UK, Canada, Hungary, Brazil, the list goes on of countries that are urging Israel not to take this action and using words like a ceasefire for the first time in a declaration to the UN. Do you think Israel is losing international support for this war?
I don't think that any cessation of the fire will help anyone. I don't think that we are measuring right now the international support for Israel's position against the security of Israel. There are two different things. When a Brazilian president dares to say that we are doing what Hitler did, I think that is crossing the lowest threshold possible of humanitarian approach to what Israel is doing. We are working as hard as we can to keep people out of harm's way because these people are our neighbors. And among them, there is a terrorist organization that uses them as human shields.
Let me ask you
about... And this government has said that, as many other governments.
Let me ask you about some of the things that are happening on the ground. One is, yesterday the UN said it has credible allegations that Palestinian women and children have, in its words, been arbitrarily and deliberately executed in Gaza, in places where they sought refuge or while fleeing, some of them holding white sheets, for example. How do you respond to those reports from the UN?
That the United Nations personnel on the ground has been proven to be members of Hamas that spread lies. They are not providing any proof. To mention the Al-Hali Hospital at the beginning of the war, when they mentioned 20 minutes after there was a bombardment at the parking place, that there were 500 casualties, which turned out to be, unfortunately, but still much lower number. So I wouldn't trust the UN personnel on the ground in any way, shape, or form, especially when we're talking about the UNRWA organization, as it's been fully infiltrated by Hamas, that is, to many, is actually as a monopolizer of the international assistance and aids, continues to steal international aid. There are horrible, horrible events that are taking place there, and women are dying, and children are dying.
So will there be an investigation into what the UN has reported?
Can you rephrase that question? I'm not sure that I fully understand. If you're asking me now about...
Will there be an investigation into what the UN has reported?
Well, when the UN files an official report, there may be any kind of investigation, which is the norm in Israel. Mm. If there is an official complaint, there is an official investigation. I'm not aware of that. But I'm telling you that there are so many allegations by UN officials that are based on lies, and either because they are supported by data that is provided by a terrorist organization or because they are biased. And so that has been our experience, unfortunately. And in spite of all of that, we will continue to work with the UN organizations to provide any humanitarian aid that is necessary for the Palestinian population, because they shouldn't suffer under this biased attitude of the UN.
Let me ask you, we have just a couple of minutes left. You mentioned UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency staff. Your government said that it had evidence that 12 workers there had ties to the Hamas attack on the 7th of October. The CBC has reported that Canadian officials haven't seen that evidence. And that's important in part because aid to UNRWA has been ceased by many countries, including Canada, because of those allegations. Why hasn't that evidence been shared with Canadian officials?
I can't tell you what Canadian officials have. There are many ways to approach them, but
they told CBC that they haven't seen the evidence
videos of a UNRWA worker, which was identified on air, online. We also distributed that those images, who is seen being abducting a body of an Israeli young man, shot in his car. They are abducting the body, putting it in a car and driving away. So that video is widely available, and there will be much more evidence left just like that.
Have you seen the evidence?
I saw the video.
Have you seen the evidence, though, that 12 UNRWA workers, according to the Israeli government, had ties to the Hamas attack? Have you seen that evidence?
Why should I see the evidence?
Well, because it has a material impact. I mean, the question is whether that evidence exists. The Canadian officials, other officials, haven't seen that. And there are concerns around whether that aid is going to continue to flow because of those allegations. And the question is just what evidence is there?
No, I think you're confusing a few things here. I'm the Israeli ambassador in Canada. I'm not working with the United Nations. So the evidence that it needs to be provided to the United Nations, that there's an investigation going on. The steps that were taken by the international community vis-a-vis Hamas are not steps that Israel has asked for, but they've come to the conclusion that they must freeze the aid, the financial aid. The third part is that that material assistance, as I just mentioned earlier, in spite of all that we know with UNRWA, is still flowing into the Gaza Strip as we speak. So the conclusion reached by the international community that UNRWA needs to be changed or perhaps even completely disbanded, I don't know what, all of that has nothing to do with the current provision of aid, which continues in spite of the fact that we know that this organization is to a very great extent filled by Hamas operatives.
Ambassador, we will have to leave it there. We will talk again. In the meantime, I do appreciate your time this morning on the program. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Matt.
Ido Moed is Israel's ambassador to Canada. He was in Ottawa.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.